All right, good afternoon. Get ready to laugh and learn here on Good News in Real Estate. I'm Mark Cumberland, along with my co-host, the mortgage mom, Deanne Katsaris. How are you, Deanne?
I'm great, Mark. How are you?
I'm very, very good. And we're here on WWDB 860 every Friday from 1 to 2. This is the 571st show.
What?
If you want it, yeah, I think I'm getting pretty close, actually. If you want to ask us a question or you have any kind of real estate mortgage needs, give us a call. My number is 267-266-5501. See, you confused me there. What's your number?
My number is 609-605-7153.
And we're here just to help you out in any way we can with your real estate needs. And you can listen to this show and the past shows at goodnewsandrealestate.com or at WWDB's webpage. So what's coming up today?
Coming up on today's show, Mark, we have the Market Report.
Yes.
Which is sponsored by the Philadelphia Real Estate Classes. Get a license now.
It's a good time.
We also have our business tips with Asking Dr. A.
Right.
We have Mark's funny story.
Got one for you.
We have our mortgage mom topic.
Which is?
Taxes and identity theft while purchasing.
I'll have to remember that one.
All right. I doubt it. Questions. If you make an offer on a house and the owner comes back with a counteroffer and you agree to it, can the owner still change his mind and sell it to someone else?
Good
Next question.
Question.
Can you negotiate the price of a bank-owned home?
All right.
Third question. Where can I find a real estate agent code of ethics? Is there such a thing? Oh, yes, there is. Next one. Can a broker sign an exclusive buyer representation agreement with the buyer when the broker is representing the seller as a dual agent?
Go on.
And Mark, first, give us your motivational quote.
And what's the topic of the day?
It's funny you should ask. The topic of the day are investors are not the enemy.
That's true. They're getting a bad rep in Philly. So the motivational quote is, achievement is largely the product of steadily raising one's level of aspiration and expectation.
Wow.
Yes.
It's a good one.
Because I am raising my expectations.
Good.
All right. So with that, you're listening to Good News in Real Estate. We'll be right back.
Today, there are literally billions of users on social media. What, if anything, are you doing to tap into this vast market of home buyers and sellers? Can't decide whether Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat is the right place to promote your real estate business? Heard about Facebook ads for businesses but don't know what to do to get started? If this sounds like you, then check out City Blast, the world's largest social media agency for real estate professionals. As often as you choose and customize to your market, City Blast's social experts post engaging articles, videos, and listings to your Facebook, Facebook business page, Twitter, and LinkedIn accounts. They've helped thousands of agents get leads through social media with their patented Never Lose a Lead service and can help you build your social media profile and market your listings online. Find them online at cityblast.com or call 1-888-712-7888. Again, that's cityblast.com or 1-888-712-7888. Use promo code Philly.
Welcome back to Good News in Real Estate, all positive all the time here on WWDB 860 AM. That's the way Sam said to say it. He said, go up, you go up to the end. AM.
Okay. All right, I like the Barry White version better.
Anyway, so where are we at?
Mark, we are up to the Market Report.
And there's the bell. And there's no doubt about it. The 2018 market had a little ups and downs, but mostly up. Most agents, and I've been talking to a lot of agents, and they're all freaked out right now, and I think they drank too much over the holidays. They're all shopping around and moving, and they're all getting now. I'm looking forward to. They all should start getting their 1099s like this week. So they're all going to figure out how much they gave their broker last year.
God.
And then I'm going to call them up and like ants up the pain a little bit. How much did you give your broker? $80,000. We should have a business meeting. But anyway, the market was great. And what most of the public doesn't understand, that most of the agents had their best year of all time in 2018. That's how good it was.
It was fabulous.
Right. It was a great year. And it's going to be better in 19. See, there's a 499er. So the year started off with sky-high home prices, historically low mortgage rates, and a definite upper hand for the sellers, and we're still a little bit in the inventory issue. In recent months, though, the home prices have faltered a little bit. Not much in Philly, though. Mostly California, Arizona, some of the other places. But our Philly market is strong. If we could only get some help from City Council and the mayor and leave us alone, things would even be better.
And well, just to mention, I have a guest that's going to be coming up on our show.
Yes.
Whatever that he's with City Council. You're going to love him.
He's working in City Council?
Correct.
I worked in City Council 14 years.
Yeah, he's a fabulous guy. We're doing a lot of work together, and I'm really excited to have him on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's from the government, huh? He's here to help? Uh-oh. That makes me nervous. You're bringing in government guys. All right. Well, will this trend continue? Yes, this trend is going to continue. Will housing experience the same wild ride in the New Year's? Of course. And here's what the experts, and there's experts all over the place. I'm really getting tired of social media experts. There's too many of them. Everybody that thinks they got a Facebook page thinks they're a social media expert.
Oh, God.
Will mortgage rates continue to rise? Maybe.
And will they continue to go down?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Despite the steady climb for the past year, mortgage rates remain lower than they were during most of the recession and below average for the type of strong economy that we've been experiencing. The change in 2019, a 30-year fixed rate, reached, what, we got up to 5.8% at one time? It never got that high,
did it? Never got that high.
No. What was the highest we got to?
The highest rate we did was 5.5%, and that was on an FHA loan with a really low credit score.
Yeah, so we're not going to see the dark days of 2008 again, not for a long time. In fact, this economy is booming. I just can't believe there's 8 steel mills being built in the USA.
In the USA.
There hasn't been steel mills built since the late 1800s or early 1900s. That's how good the economy is. And millennials will keep buying homes despite those rising rates if they do raise. Because they're the biggest group in the country, 91 million of them. Housing market in 19 will be characterized by continuing rising rates, surging millennial demand, rising rates by making housing less affordable. Certain markets, that's the case. Will they deter potential home buyers in the market? I doubt it. What are you going to do? You got to buy. And you want to buy before they get to 8%, you know, which is the historical average over all the years they ever kept
records.
In
banking, right.
Right. So we're still at a low rate. And millennials, they make up the largest segment of the buyers, 45% of the mortgages, compared to the boomers, which would be 17%, and the Gen Xers, 37%.
I have to do a survey and find out how many millennials. I want to see the age group. I have interest rates and demographics, but I want to see how many millennials actually.
You've done deals with?
Yeah, just in the last 2 years. It's a lot.
Yeah, a lot.
It's definitely a lot because I've talked them out of the basement.
Well, the average age in Philadelphia now, years ago when I was involved in politics in the 90s, the biggest group in Philadelphia was senior citizens. The biggest group in Philadelphia now is 18 to 40. There's over 800,000, almost 900,000 of them. That's the new group.
Yep.
And they're not loyal to anybody. Like, they're not loyal to a particular party.
Right.
Anything like that. They're wide open. So that's the group. These first-time home buyers, the older millennial move-up buyers will have more options in the mid to upper tier price points. They're making more money now. They make up the majority of millennials who closed in 2019. Looking forward to 2020, expected to be the peak of millennial home buying year, with the largest cohort millennials turning 30 years old. That's where they're at.
That's where they're at.
Millennials are also likely to make up the largest share of home buyers for the next decade as their housing needs adjust over time. And the average person moves, you know, the average person moves 11 times in their lifetime in the United States. Not they don't buy a house 11 times. They either rent it
right.
A couple places and bought a couple of houses. The average person in the USA moves 11 times. In her lifetime.
Well, I helped with that average because I was 32.
And the average life of a mortgage is 6 years now. All in, housing is set to slow down for next year. This is what they're saying is nationwide. It's not going to slow down in Philly. We're going to have a little more inventory, but it's going to be busy. The medium long-term prospects for housing are good because demographics are going to continue to support demand. The slower price appreciation, which should slow down a little bit if we get more inventory. But right now, man, that appreciation is around 8% citywide. You get to certain neighborhoods like a Fishtown, man, you're at 15% or more.
Right.
Right now in Philly, there's 4,323 homes for sale in Philadelphia out of 676,000. Now that number should ring a bell with our listening audience. Did you hear that, listening audience? There's only 4,323 homes for sale in Philadelphia
and how
out
many
of 676,000.
And how many of those homes are move-in condition?
I don't know.
Yeah. As it. Well, no, I mean,
that was a good question, but I don't know.
I mean, because I've been looking at all the listings that are in Philadelphia, and I'm going to say at least 30% of them
need
work.
Yeah.
No, need work.
Yeah.
Like, are not habitable at all.
Oh, I don't know about not habitable, but a lot of them are going to probably need some updating. In Bucks County, there's 1,500 for sale. In Delaware County, there's 1,100 for sale. And in Monco County, there's only 2,100 for sale.
And that would be Montgomery County.
Montgomery County, right. That is the lowest. That's an inventory issue.
Right.
And due to the ongoing government shutdown, which I have yet to feel the impact of, haven't bothered me. I haven't lost any sleep. I haven't really noticed anything. I haven't gotten any letters from the IRS. Nobody's been bothering me. I don't know. Plus, it's only, 25% of the government that's just shut down?
Right.
They would have just come to a deal. They should let me in there and let me. What should I do? I should go in there and split the baby.
Always.
If they let me go into that room and split the baby between these two parties, we'd have a wall and the DACA kids would be happy.
I'd like to see you having a conversation with Pelosi.
yeah. Me and her. That would be good. I could split the baby and take care of this whole problem. So anyway, this ongoing shutdown, you might wonder what the effect. It really hasn't had that much effect on real estate. I heard a few things on Facebook. However, the uncertainty of the shutdown has potential harm to the market. Of course, there's always people with the doom and gloom. But looking ahead to 2009, we expect a weaker existing home sales. That's because they think there's going to be more inventory and they'll be on the market longer. But to that's a godsend to us here in Philly Metro. Out in California and some of them other places, Arizona, where there's no inventory, they got problems. So anyway, the median existing home price for all housing types increased in December up to $253,000, up from $246,000 in December of a year ago. And this marks the 82nd straight month of year-over-year gains in value.
And that's amazing.
Right?
That's awesome.
And I'll tell you, I just had a conversation with somebody before I came to the studio about this economy, and I gave her that talk about the Reagan years and the Clinton years and these years. And I'm seeing estimates of this could go 5-8 years. This goes 8 years.
When they're raising
the loan
limits.
This is going to be the best economy of our lifetime.
When they're raising the loan limits for FHA and your conforming loans, you know you're in a good economy.
Yeah. When you're building a steel mill that costs like $3 billion.
Right.
I'll give you the example to the audience. If your Burger King nearby closes for 2 months so they could put new tables in, you're in a good economy. If your Wawa closes for 2 months while they redo it, you're in a good economy.
Right. Something wrong with that.
Right.
All right.
So what's the rates?
So that segment was sponsored by the Philadelphia Real Estate Classes. Get your real estate license now. You can give them a call at 215-335-6919. Or you can go right online at PhiladelphiaRealEstateClasses.com. They now have 3 locations in Center City, Mount Airy, and Northeast Philadelphia.
And I might add a City Line location in March.
Awesome.
So, what are the rates?
So, speaking of awesome, our rates are awesome. Right now, we're at a 30-year fixed conventional at 4.625. Your 15 is at 4.25%. 30-year jumbo, I hate to quote a 30-year jumbo, but you're going to be somewhere around 4.75%. 30-year with an FHA loan is 4.875.
That's a good rate.
It's a great rate. They're all great rates. Your 5-1 ARM is 4.25%.
Very good. I mean, those rates are really good rates.
The rates are great right now. There's, you know, I have clients that are pre-approved right now that are calling and wondering if they can get an FHA loan because the government is shut down. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. And yes, we can.
Yes.
So speaking of funny, Mark, tell us your funny story.
So here's the story. So the economy's really good, right? And this one company, they thought it was time for a shakeup. So they hired this new CEO. So this new boss is determined to rid the company of all the slackers. He wants a shakeup, show everybody who's in charge. So he takes a tour of the facilities, and the CEO notices this guy leaning on a wall in a room full of workers. And he thinks this is his chance to show everyone, you know, who's in charge, who's running this business. So the CEO walks up to the guy and he goes, "How much money do you make a week? The undone young fellow looks at him and he goes, "I make about $200 a week." He goes, "Why?" And the CEO goes, he takes out $200 cash and he screams at the guy, "Here's $200. Now get out and don't come back." And he's feeling all cocky and good, pretty good about his first firing. And he looks around the room and everybody's looking at him. And then he says to everybody looking around him, he goes, "Anybody know what that slacker did here?" And then one guy with a little uncontrollable grin on his face, and all the other workers start to murmur. He goes, "That was the pizza delivery guy."
That's good.
So much for the big CEO.
Right? If you have a funny story you'd like to hear on our show, send it to 8029@comcast.net or give us a call at 267-266-5501.
And coming up is the Mortgage Mom segment. And our topic today is taxes and identity theft while purchasing. So with that, you're listening to Good News in Real Estate, all positive all the time. We'll be right back.
National Title Agency, headquartered at 10001 West Lincoln Drive in Marlton, provides the real estate industry with title searches, title commitments, title insurance, and real estate closings throughout the Delaware Valley. National Title's business model and proactive approach to preparing title commitments, preparation for closing, and attention to detail provides the realtor, attorney, mortgage lender, buyer, and seller with an easy, effective, and hassle-free avenue to closing. These standards enable you to close loans faster, more effectively, and more efficiently than the competition. National Title's commitment to exceeding expectations, reliability, flexibility, and fast, reliable service has made National Title the choice title insurer for the real estate industry throughout the entire area. Give them a call, 856-596-6550, or visit them online at nationaltitle.net. Closings anytime, anyplace, anywhere, exceeding your expectations.
All right, welcome back to Good News from Real Estate, all positive all the time here on WWDB 860 AM. So now it's time for the Mortgage Mom segment with the Mortgage Mom, Deanne Katsaris, and her topic is taxes and identity theft while purchasing a home. So tell me about this.
Two favorite topics, taxes. And we're not talking about real estate taxes. We're talking about your income tax.
Yeah.
This is the best time of year to purchase a home. Why are you laughing?
Because I ain't even talking about it.
are you starting to shake and shimmer a little bit?
I already got him feeling ill.
It's important because people don't realize that your tax refund check can be used.
I think the last one I got done was in the 70s.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, the majority of my clients get a nice tax refund check. And instead of going with their first-time homebuyer grants and First Front Door and all the programs that are available that you have to pay back if you decide to move or refinance your house within 5 to 7 years.
Right.
Nobody knows what's going to happen within 5 to 7 years. So I try to steer people away from doing those grants, getting their taxes done ahead of time. If you're getting between $5,000 to $7,000 on a tax refund, first of all, I'm very jealous, but second of all, that money can be used directly to purchase your home.
Right.
Now that people say, well, if I make a large deposit into my checking account, how is that going to affect getting my loan approved? And it doesn't. As long as the money that's going into your account matches the tax refund, you're fine. There is no seasoning required. Generally, the rule of thumb is that if a large deposit's in the account, needs to sit there for 60 days.
Whose rule is that?
The underwriters, Fannie, Freddie, FHA. Any large deposit that's put in the account needs to sit there for 60 days. With your tax refund, we can source it, so we do not need to know where it's coming from. Now, if you decide to go to the bank,
it's the same as marinating, right? Is that marinating?
It's same philosophy. Once again, 2019. Oh God, I'm trying to get through my segment. So with that being said, if you decide to go to the bank and cash your refund check,
yes,
and take $500 or $1,000 out and then deposit the rest, that's not going to work because we can't source it.
Oh.
You follow me?
So now you got to marinate it.
So you need to deposit it into the account and you need to let it sit there and then you can withdraw the funds.
This is America we're talking about, right?
Come on. It makes perfect sense. Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
All right.
They just want to see where the money came from so that you didn't go take a loan.
I got a check for $5,000. I spent $500 and I put $4,500 in the bank. What's the problem there?
Because when you send me a copy of the check,
right,
it's going to say $5,000.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I can show you my bank statement that I spent. I need to put $4,500 in because I wanted to go to Atlantic City and I took $500.
Right.
And that's not good.
So do me a favor. Right. Wait until the money is in the account and then go to the ATM.
All right.
Then you could pop out your $500 and lose it.
All right.
At the casinos.
All right.
The second piece, which I couldn't even get through the first piece, the second piece of that is you want to make sure that you're protected from identity theft. One out of four of us. So in this studio right now, there's four of us.
Yes.
One of us is going to be a victim of identity theft. And people say, well, you know, they could take whatever they want because my credit stinks and I don't have any money. But that's not what they're taking. They're actually taking your social security number, your date of birth, your name, and they're selling it on the black market.
Right.
And every single year, that technology is growing and getting better and better. So these criminals are becoming smarter. So you need to make sure that you're protected with one of the top plans. And we just happen to have Legal Shield and Identity Shield that protects us. Up to a $5 million guarantee. Yes, I'm doing a commercial for them. But they will restore your identity back to its original state up to a $5 million guarantee.
I'm waiting for this to happen to me because I'm ready.
So, well, exactly. That's what I say. Bring it on. So let's say you enroll in this identity membership for $9.95 as a single person.
Right.
And in 2020, you get audited.
What happened?
Let's say you get audited for your taxes in 2019. You are going to be covered. You will actually have somebody that will sit down with you and that tax agent, right? That IRS agent, the attorney will sit down with them up to 50 hours and guide you through the process. That's priceless.
Oh, I know.
It's amazing. I mean, it's a peace of mind. So, and you want to make sure that when you're going through the process that you're protected. Because if something were to happen and you go to closing and we refresh your credit and there's something on there, you're not closing on your loan.
No.
You are not closing on your loan.
Plus, you're not doing anything else.
Even if you say that it's not you, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't work.
It still affects you being able to close.
And if you got a common name, like Joe Smith...
Well, I actually have a Joe Smith Jr., and there's a bunch of...
There's a bunch of
Joe Smiths. And let's say his father is a senior, and his father has certain things that are on the credit. They end up on the son's credit report.
I just
had
one with somebody named Johnson, and that's a popular name. And it was some...
Ray Johnson Jr.?
Yeah, there was like all kinds of Johnsons.
You can call him Ray, or you can call him Ray J. You don't remember that?
No. Okay. That's probably before my time.
Right.
No, but I've had this for, I don't know, how long have we had it? Almost 10 years, I guess.
Yeah, it's actually 8 years.
8 years?
Yeah.
I've had
that phone call, Mark. I've had that call where the IRS calls and says someone has filed tax returns in your name.
Yeah.
And I'm like, cool, make sure they pay the bill.
Should I get a check?
Make sure they pay the bill. But There's a lot. I mean, it's we're making a joke about it right now, but it is extremely serious, especially when
I just upped mine. I mean, because I got business accounts,
right?
Personal accounts. I just upped mine with your husband.
And the other thing that's going to help you, especially, is that vault program. So if you forget your passwords, everything goes into the vault, which is an app on your phone.
I got to do that.
And it's military.
I got 50 some passwords.
It's military encrypted. The only thing that you need to make sure is that you don't forget
the vault password.
Like tattoo it on the bottom of your foot or something.
I write that on a sticky pad and put it on my wall, right?
Tattoo it on the bottom of your foot, because if you forget that vault password, you're screwed.
I'll put it under my dog's collar. It'll never get that baby.
Oh, my God.
Glitter.
All right. Speaking.
Actually, you got to show me that, because I showed you my phone. I have over 50 passwords. With the businesses and all that.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the butt. Right. And I have to constantly go in. Like something out of my Facebook, you think I would know that one. I had to go in because they make you change it all the time. And go in, and I got to use that feature.
That's the point.
I know.
That's the point. All right, our first question. If you make an offer on a house and the owner comes back with a counter offer and you agree to it, can the owner still change his mind and sell to someone else?
Not if everybody signed it. If everybody signed it and executed the contract and it is now executed, the seller has to live up to the contract. He can't just change his mind. This is the kind of stuff that happens. Like, I'll give you an example. Somebody goes way down the shore and they got their house for sale.
Right.
And then one of the neighbors comes back from the shore, finds out that their neighbor's house is for sale. And they go to him and said, "Man, I didn't know you were selling your house. I would have bought it for my son. I'll give you, what'd you get? $100,000? I would have gave you $120,000. And then all of a sudden that seller says, "Oh man, I get another $20,000. If the agents don't watch what they're doing and make sure everything's initialed and dated, there's an out. And then they could take that offer. If everything's initialed and dated correctly, they can't. So that's the answer to the question. It has to be legally. As long as everything's legally done, seller just can't change his mind. He signed a contract.
Right, it has to be binding.
Right.
The next question. You ready for this one?
Yes.
If I am a real estate agent in New Jersey, licensed real estate agent, and I want to sell a property that I own as an investment property, can I do it as a for sale by owner? I'm hearing crickets.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure about that one. I think you could if your broker gave you permission.
Okay.
But most of the brokers are going to want you to run through your office. You shouldn't have to do that. If you have to do that, you're with the wrong broker. The reason you're doing it is to save the commission, correct?
Correct.
Right. So if your broker is not going to let you sell your personal property, now I can see if you did like 10 investment properties, you can't expect them all. But if it's your primary, your broker shouldn't charge you.
Right. It's not a primary. It's an investment, but.
Well, on ours, you can do a few investments. There's a limit.
Sure.
But, you know.
Just one and done. Okay.
Yeah. Well, what'd you think?
I just thought there would be some sort of legality where you'd have to sign something saying that the office where my license is not responsible in some sort of way, but.
You'd still be liable.
Yeah.
And your broker's still liable, too. Because you got your license hanging at his office. Everything's better if it's disclosed.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, next question is, where can I find a real estate agent code of ethics? And is there such a thing?
There is such a thing.
Oh, there is such a thing.
If you Google code of ethics, realtors, it'll take you to the National Association of Realtors Board. And there is a code of ethics.
And if you're a realtor, I mean, every 2 years you have to take, in New Jersey, you have to take the test.
Yeah, it's every 2 years.
For the code of ethics.
A test? No, you don't have to take a test.
Yes, you have to. Yes, you do.
You got to take the 3-hour class.
No, well, there's also a test.
Oh, there's
in
a
New
test?
In New Jersey, you take a test. There's 10 questions that you need to answer.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, really.
They don't make us take a test in Pennsylvania. We just, because you either have ethics or you don't have ethics.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, I could teach it. But if you're a criminal, you don't have ethics.
You don't have it.
But there is a code, you know. And you can go to the NAR, and National Association of Realtors, and you can read the code.
All right.
The question's probably because somebody's doing something unethical.
Or they need to take it and they don't know where to find it.
Oh.
Next question. Can you negotiate the price of a bank-owned property?
Yes, but it's all up to the bank.
Right.
You know, so the banks, they usually, because it's usually a foreclosure, and they jump through hoops to get ownership, and now they list it for a price, and everybody puts in offers. Yeah, it's all negotiable. It depends on which one the bank's going to take. But yes, you can negotiate. If they want $100,000 and you only want to give them $50,000, you're negotiating.
Because what do we always say? If you don't ask?
The answer is no. Rule number one.
Next.
What's rule number two?
I don't know what
rule. Yes, you do.
I'm sure I do.
It starts with little.
Starts with little?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Little pigs get fed, big pigs get
slaughtered.
Rule number two.
Right. All right. Next question. Can a broker sign an exclusive buyer representation agreement with a buyer when that broker is representing the seller as a dual agent? Isn't this a conflict of interest?
This is a big debate. There was one on Facebook last week all about this, and there was a bunch of agents saying, it's illegal. No, it's not. In Pennsylvania and in Jersey, it's legal. You can represent both parties. You know what the weird thing about this? And then they started arguing with me. I should have never put my 2 cents in there, because then I had to go and turn off notifications for this Facebook.
Right.
And they were going, there's no way you can be completely 100% fair with two parties. Yes, there is. There's a way to do this.
Well, that's
in fact, when you go out on a listing contract with a seller, one of the first questions the sellers always ask you are, you going to get me a buyer?
That's right.
They want you to bring them a
buyer.
They
want you to bring a buyer.
Because they hired you. They want you to bring the buyer.
They trust you.
They trust you. They know if they got you and you got the buyer, this deal is probably going to happen.
Right.
But these agents, I heard agents on Facebook say, I never do dual agency. I turn that buyer over to somebody else in my office. And I'm like, now I got somebody else in my deal.
Right.
You know, first of all, I got an $800,000 listing with a 6% commission, which is $48,000. Jersey was thinking about making this illegal. Now, what would you have done if I was living in Jersey, I was an agent in Jersey, and I had an $800,000 listing that was paying me $48,000 if I sold it, I listed it and I sold it, and then the state of New Jersey, this nut you got, Murphy, Murphy told me that I can't do that. You got to give that buyer to somebody else. I would say, Deanne, you're licensed in Jersey, right? Deanne, write up this contract and I'll give you 10% for writing up the contract. And that's what I would do.
Sure.
Because I'm a business person. And Murphy would, you know, he's still
tax me on anything.
But I think, yes, you can treat them fair. Now, if you're a seller, if the seller or the buyer said, what do you think the seller is going to take? And it's listed for 100, keep it simple. And the seller said to you, I'm looking for 100, but I'll take 90. You can't tell the buyer that. You say to the buyer, it's listed for 100. What do you want to offer?
Right.
Well, I don't want to offer 100. I'll offer them 92 or 94, whatever. And then the seller says, I ain't taking 94. I'll take 95, 96. And then you go back and forth. But there's a way to do it.
Sure.
I think most people are ethical. If you're a creep and you don't have any ethics.
It's greed.
Right.
It's not. I think it comes
but
down
like,
to greed.
But to me, to turn a buyer over because somebody else thinks I can't be fair, I think that's bull. Anyway, don't get me started with that
one. Next question. Is it legal for an agent representing the buyers in a deal to lend money to their client for the down payment on a home?
This one's a little iffy. Well, Mike, you really need this commission bad, and the guy's short a grand. So,
Come from the down payment.
I'll give you $1,000, and then you'll have enough closing costs, and then I'll get my commission. No.
Right.
First of all, how are you going to disclose that?
Well, you can. The agent.
You can be a nice guy and help somebody out.
Well, you can definitely give part of your commission to the buyer for closing costs, not down payment. So if they're short, let's say they're short $1,000 to close, there's been times where the buyer and the seller.
This says lend.
Oh, lend? No, there's no lending. There's no lending. It would be a gift.
This would be.
It's a gift.
No more real estate license.
Yeah, exactly.
This would be illegal.
It would be. Yeah, there's no lending.
Yeah.
Unless you go to Cousin Vinny and you're...
And he wants 21% and you're pinky.
All right, very good. And coming up next is our business segment with Asking Dr. A.
Very good. So with that, you're listening to Good News in Real Estate, all positive all the time, here on WWDB 860 AM.
In today's economy, you need a lending institution you can trust. If you've been thinking about reducing your current mortgage term to 15 years or less, the Philadelphia Federal Credit Union offers a fast-track mortgage program. Enjoy amazing savings and a fixed rate as low as 4% APR for a limited time. Call us at 215-934-3500 to speak with a loan representative. Best of all, there are no closing costs or appraisal fees. PFCU is member-owned, so all profits go back to the community and back to you as lower fees and better rates. Philadelphia Federal Credit Union. We're not here for our profit. We're here for yours. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome back to Good News in Real Estate, all positive all the time here on WWDB 860 AM. So where are we at the end?
You're supposed to go up.
Oh.
AM. Anyway.
The call sound. The call signs.
14. We are up to, where are we? We are up to our business segment with Asking Dr. A. And we are up to our 14 rules for mastering the interview.
Yeah. This is a new segment. And he's going to go through these 14 rules, which is, I'm doing a lot of interviews, so I'm really interested in this, doctor.
I'm glad we could do this for you, Mark.
Thank you. This is, I'd be paying big bucks for this.
Oh, you'll be paying.
So, doctor, how are you?
You're getting it free, right, Mark? There is no such thing as a free lunch. You know that better than anybody.
Free. Right.
Nothing free. All right, so, doctor, how you want to start this? What's the first three rules?
Let's just jump in, and I'm going to talk about them in different orders, okay? All right. Rule number two. All right, I like to skip around. All right. One of the things you need to do is you need to standardize your questions, and more importantly, you have to standardize your process. One of the problems with interviewing is everybody assumes it's pretty easy to do because we're used to talking to people. We all do it, right? But the real issue is you need to have a very, very similar approach, or you're going to be biasing the person who you're interviewing one way or another, and you're going to be biasing your opinion one way or the other. So you need to have a process that's very similar for everyone who you interview. Okay. And part of that process is you need to figure out which questions you're going to ask. All right. No matter what happens in the interview. So you have the same, at least a common set of questions that you can compare across people that you're interviewing. All the questions don't have to be the same, but you need to have a standard set of questions that will be the same to help with your comparison. If not, you might be comparing apples to oranges instead of apples to apples.
That makes sense. Otherwise, you could be all over the place.
And people typically are, because they get, a lot of times what happens is people like to start an interview by asking something personal or just being very friendly. And, and then all of a sudden one thing leads to another. Before you know it, you're 10 minutes into the interview and you haven't asked them anything regarding the job yet.
That's right. Okay? I had a coaching session with an agent this morning, and he was supposed to call five people every week, every day for the last week and stay on script. And he was supposed to start with the script as soon as they answered the phone. Just say, do you have a moment? And then if they said yes, do the script. And he would start out with, hey, how you doing? and so then it would be the 10 minutes of how everybody's been doing for the last year before he got to the script. So then the script was secondary. So I understand.
Right. And on top of that, he's wasting all this time. So if he's spending 1/6 of his time, okay, not dealing with what he should be dealing with, that means every sixth person, they could have had an additional person that he's talking to. He's wasting his time. He's not effectively using his time.
Right.
A second thing is what you want to do is you want to create and use a checklist of the different things that you need to have. In other words, is the room ready? Okay. Is it the same room? Is it, what is the environment like? Are there certain people who are supposed to be there? in the interview with you? Have they been contacted? Have you set up the right people afterwards? So it's just like any other task. You know, you need to be really organized. And one of the best ways to be organized is just have a checklist. I mean, you don't go into a listing presentation without having a checklist of what are the things you're going to cover and what you're going to do if you're going to be successful in that listing presentation, because you're always going to forget something. The same thing happens with the interview process. So you need to create and use a checklist so you make sure that you get everything done that you need to get done.
That's right. I've forgotten to, in the past, in interviews, show them the office. I went through the whole interview process, the whole model of the company, the compensation package, the whole nine yards, shook their hand, and they left, and I realized I didn't even show them the office. So it's important.
Right, and sometimes there's little things that you forget about, okay? So you want to make sure that all those things you put in there, again, you want to have consistency, you want to have continuity, but in this case, you want to make sure all the things that need to get done before the interview, during the interview, and after the interview happened. Do you send them a note afterwards? Has that note been sent? Is somebody else supposed to send that note? Is it an email or is it a little thank you note, which is more powerful? You know, so there needs to be a checklist of everything you need to do involved in the interview, because the bottom line on all these interviews is you want the person to say yes if you decide to invite them to join your organization. You always want that to happen, because you don't want it to be the other way, where you spend all this time and energy, you find somebody who you really want, you go to them and they say, you know, I've taken another job.
Right.
Because that's really frustrating. So you need to make sure that you have your act together. The third thing and the last one in this part that I'd like to do is, it's really important to be yourself. If you're not yourself, and if you're somewhat phony, or if you're trying to be overly friendly or under friendly or whatever it is, you know, it frequently comes across as not being genuine. And when you're not genuine in the interview, a lot of times people pick that up. And in fact, the truth of the matter is that's the type of person you want to work for you anyhow. You want somebody who's sensitive to other people in the relationship, because so much of the business is relationship itself. So you want to have somebody who's picking that up. So if you come across as not being genuine, whatever being true to yourself is, it's a real negative in the interview process.
Yeah, I mean, you're better off dealing with the truth, and people feel that when you're honest with them, and you talk.
Yeah, one of the other points that I'll talk more about, you know, later is called realistic job preview. It needs to be realistic, but this is a little component of the realistic job preview part.
Yeah, because the worst thing you can do is promise people things you can't deliver. And then once they get there, and then, well, you told me this, and this, and then I haven't seen any of that. And then you're like, well, but you hired them, you know?
Right.
I see that.
Or miscommunication, yeah, right before you even start.
Yeah, I see that with recruiting, and then people get there and then they're not happy because what they were told is not what happened. You know.
Right. And they go back to that premise that I said, that you want the job candidate to say yes, but you want them to say yes because of truthfulness, not because you've told them something that you can't deliver on.
Right. And it's a lot to remember. I mean, all these things, when you sit down with somebody, that's why, like, in our interview process at our three offices, we have a folder, and there's notes in there for us.
Right, the checklist.
Yeah,
right.
So, you know, we all start the same way. And actually, sometimes we have discussions about it because we think one of us is talking too much, rather than getting to the point. You know,
I can't imagine that.
You can ramble and never ask somebody to join, too. You know, and then they leave wondering, what the hell is that about? I've been in interviews like that. I remember my first interview with Keller Williams when I first was interviewed. I went to this meeting and they talked about the quadrant, and they had a blank tablet, and they talked to me about building relationships. And about 35 minutes later, I was shaking hands, walking out the door. And I remember walking into my car and I was like, that was like kissing my sister, man. What the hell was that about? Like, nobody asked me to join.
Right.
Nobody asked me to join. It was about building a relationship down the road. That went through. I had a really hard time with that. And then when they hired me as a CEO, they sent me to training, and they kept talking about this, building the relationships.
And they didn't know you were warm and fuzzy, Mark?
Yeah, and I guess they didn't get that part. And then finally, I was talking to John Davis. This was back in the day. And John Davis said, forget all that stuff. He just ask him on a scale of 1 to 10 how close they are to joining. If they're over to 5, go for it. I was like, solved. Problem solved. Yeah,
exactly.
They threw me off. That wasn't my personality. Like that, you know, go meet me for a coffee.
Well, that's why we talk about it. You're a dominant. You're a D, okay? So get to the bottom line. Don't mess around. You know, just close. Ask me if you want me to join or not, and I'll decide.
Right.
Type of thing.
Hey, you got to ask.
That's what John Davis recommended that you do.
That solved all my problems. I came back from Texas. I was a whole different recruiter. They had me confused.
It's kind of like going out meeting someone that you're attracted to. You flirt back and forth, and nobody ever asks for your phone number.
And the weird thing, I came from...
You just totally disregard what I...
No, I agree with you. But I came from somewhere, the reason they were after me was because I was a recruiter.
Right.
I was recruiting for 4 offices, and then they like had me twisted up, like, don't do it that way, do it this way. And then I was like, wait a minute, you know. Anyway, but I understand how important that interview process is. Because if I would have started drawing quadrants on a tablet, I don't think I would have recruited anybody. Unless Kiyosaki walked in the room.
Right. Then you'd know it. All right. Well, that was good stuff, Dr. A. Thank you.
All right, Doctor. We ate up all of our time. So the next segment, we will continue on with these 14 rules, correct?
Absolutely.
Right,
yes, we will. And
all right,
we'll cover three or four more, depending on how much time we have.
All right. Tell us how to get a hold of you.
All you have to do is email me at dr.a@abelson.net, or give me a call at 888-ABELSON.
Very good.
All right. Thank you, Dr.
All right, Doctor.
All right. And coming up.
Enjoyed it, guys.
All right. Talk to you.
Thank you. And coming up next is our topic of the day. Investors are not the enemy.
All right, very good. So with that, you're listening to Good News in Real Estate, all positive, all the time. We'll be right back.
Thinking of getting a real estate license? It's a great time to get into business with unlimited earning potential. Philadelphia Real Estate Classes. It's a real estate school conveniently located in Philadelphia. They offer day and night classes to get you on your way into the real estate industry. If you plan to do real estate part-time or full-time, getting your license is the first step. Call 215-335-6919. Philadelphia Real Estate Classes has experienced instructors to help gain the insights you need to pass the real estate exam and get your license. It's a great time to get started. Call the Philadelphia Real Estate Classes at 215-335-6919 or visit our website at philadelphiarealestateschools.com. Get a license now.
All right, welcome back to Good News in Real Estate, all positive, all the time here on WWDB. So that was a good segment with Dr. A. So where are we at, Deanne?
Mark, we are up to our topic of the day.
Which is?
Investors are not the enemy.
You know, I was thinking about these topics and...
Yeah, where are you going with this
And
one?
In Philadelphia, every once in a while, most people don't read the papers anymore or really even watch the news. And the news doesn't really talk about this too much. But every once in a while, there's an article in a local paper, one of those community papers, or even a city paper about gentrification and neighborhoods changing. And they always demonize these investors, you know, like they're the enemy. And the investors are not always the enemy. I mean, I told you this story when I was back in the rock and roll band living on South Street, and the guy told me way before real estate was even on the radar screen,
right,
about how Society Hill was kind of a slum and the artists moved in there and then they got chased out of there in the Queen Village. Then they got chased out of Queen Village in the Bella Vista. Then they got chased out of Bella Vista in the Northern Liberties. Then they got chased out of Northern Liberties in the Fishtown. And now they're all up in Kensington. Everywhere they've been, the neighborhood is. And all of that, there was people saying, oh, no. The investors and gentrification, our taxes are going to go up, and they get demonized. Now, are there some people? They're out to make money.
Sure.
You know, but they do a lot of good things too. I mean, they The city government cannot take care of the housing inventory. When I was worked in city council back in the day, there was like 80,000 abandoned houses.
There's 50.
And the city,
because there's
676,000 houses, and people die, and there's no family. Nobody wants to deal with them.
Right.
And the city goes out of their way to keep them out of the investors' hands. They'd like to turn them over to all their little programs,
right,
where it takes them forever to get it done, and they spend a lot of money.
Right. It's these a lot of red tape to try to get it done.
And these investors come in, and they knock them out in a month, and they're back on the market, or they're rented.
And it's helping the community.
Yeah. And thanks to the unprecedented real estate market, these investors are now somehow the bad guys. During the housing boom, they canoodled with the lenders and they levered themselves to the hilt. They fueled the home prices to levels that are unsustainable in some markets. Yeah, because they were smart. They went in and they bought the houses cheap. They redid them. Like, look what happened. You know, you used to be able to buy a house in Fishtown, a three-story row, for $20,000.
Right.
And now that same house is $500,000. You know, if it wasn't for the investors that took the chances and did all that stuff,
that wouldn't be happening. You're right.
So get over it. It's, you know, there's plenty of qualified real estate investors. They have a say in this.
But they pick out the onesie twosies that are being greedy.
And they take chances.
Right.
They always are on the fringe.
Right.
Like Kensington, you know, there are 150 houses Chris Summers just did at Frankfurt and Lehigh. A block and a half away, there's a line of crack addicts banging crack. You know? I mean, they take chances, and that'll all straighten that whole neighborhood out eventually. You put 154 houses at $300,000 a pop in some neighborhood, the neighborhood's going to get better.
Sure.
So, you know, you can't just make these guys out to be bad dudes because they made some money. If you want to stabilize the housing market, you have to encourage investors. Like, the quicker you can get all these foreclosures, short sales done, the quicker you have a turnaround in the economy and the housing market.
And I don't understand why they're not in a rush to get that done.
Because they're government. They see people that make a lot of money as the enemy. We're not. They just think that we're going to take advantage of everybody. I watched a lot of weird stuff on TV, and I flipped through, and I watched this hearing in city council. It wasn't a city council hearing, but there was New York City Council people there, and it was a neighborhood, and it was gentrification. It was all about gentrification, and all these people were there complaining about these investors coming in, fixing up the dilapidated houses, and now they're worth all this money, and now these small people are worried that their taxes are going to go up. They never mentioned the part that their house that was worth, you know, $40,000 is now going to be worth $500,000.
Sure.
They're worried that they're going to have to live there and their taxes are going to go up, which I can understand that. But that's also part of progress. But just because there's opportunity.
Then sell the house and pocket $300,000 and call it a day.
I sold a bunch of Queen Village drop ceiling living rooms, paneled living rooms, shag rugs.
Right.
Back in the day.
Green avocado cabinets.
Green avocado cabinets. And all of a sudden, they were worth $300,000-$400,000. And
right.
Some senior citizen was cashing in, finally.
Yep.
You know? So, I mean, you got to look at it a couple different ways here. At the height of the housing boom, home ownership, too, also was up to, one time was up to 69%. Now it's back down to about 64% across the country.
Right.
Across the country, it's like 37% of the country rents, which is now Philly's 40%.
Well, and also because you have all these people that are saying, you know, purchase to invest and rent to live.
Right. And then you got the big government stuff. Like, they have some weird rules. Like, I think, like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all that stuff, lenders have their own overlay of fees and rules. Isn't there some rule that they'll only give you like 10 loans? If you're an investor,
right,
like that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like if you're on a roll and all of a sudden you're doing good, and this is now your job probably.
Sure.
And now because of the government, you cannot get another loan.
Right.
So then you got to figure out something, blanket everything to start over again. Like that kind of stuff really bothers me.
I agree.
Because government is the worst. I remember when I first was in city council.
They say that they're trying to protect people, but they're not. They're trying to protect the investors.
They don't
And they're trying to protect the banks.
Yeah, but they don't understand the industry. Like, city government is the worst at housing. Now, they think they got all kinds of programs. CDC, there's all these alphabet soup, community development groups, right, and all these groups that get grants, and they're going to do developments, they're going to rehab houses. I remember back in the early 90s, I was in city council, and they would take a house that was foreclosed on a sheriff's sale or something, like a two-bedroom row in Kensington. And they would spend like $60,000, $70,000 on it. And they would all have the same front. They had the same brick front they would do with this little light. You could always tell which ones they were. And then they gave them away to somebody, right? And then you would sit past this house 5 years from now, and it's totally, some of them are gone.
Some of them are gone as well.
And, but like, they just weren't good at it. Now, if the regular investor would have got that house, he would have went in and spent like a few grand back then.
Sure.
And had the house back on the market in like 30 days.
Yep.
And I remember I helped somebody get one of these houses. That's how I got involved in it. And when I got there at the house, it wasn't completely done. It was sheetrocked, but not painted. They had to put a certain amount of sweat equity into the property. Like, they didn't even clean the caulk off the tub and stuff.
Right.
After they did a, like, that was, so then they go in and finish it. So, and then, you know, they got the Kmart special light in the kitchen, and they're just not good at it. So anyway, let's not get off the topic. But anyway, like, I just seen that experience with government. And then all these rules, but I mean, you can't throw the water out with the bathwater with the baby.
Right.
I mean, you need these people.
You do need
these
people.
If it wasn't for investors, there wouldn't be.
There wouldn't be.
Mike McCann wouldn't be selling a house in Kensington for $600,000.
Agreed.
We'd still be selling them for $6,000.
Agreed.
So, I mean, they're not the enemy. Now, are there some that are taking advantage of things and doing the wrong thing? Possibly. That's in every group. There's always some. But overall, Philly would not be moving like it is if it wasn't for investors.
Agreed.
I don't know if I made a point there or not. Did I make a point?
Absolutely, Mark. And if not, you can email Mark at 8029@comcast.net or give him a call at 267-266-5501. Or you can email me at DeanneKatsaris@comcast.net or give me a call at 609-605-7153.
And a special thanks to all of our sponsors for keeping us on the air and helping us, and all the listeners tuning in every week, and for the investors making Philly a better place to live.
If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest on our show, give us a call at 267-266-5501.
So with that, have a great week. I'm Mark Cumberland.
I'm Deanne Katsaris, your mortgage mom.
You've been listening to Good News in Real Estate. All positive, all the time.